I felt like the setup of the accident was awesome and the pacing was great. But then after that, the show just... Did you just fart?
Yeah. Did it? Could you hear it?
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Hello, welcome to Just Another Review Podcast, or JARP. I'm one of your two hosts, Russ.
And I'm the other half, Sean. And unlike anything you've ever listened to on the internet, this podcast is about two friends. And Russ and I have been friends since before puberty.
Now we've matured. Emotionally, not so much, but physically matured.
Even physically, not so much. And for this podcast, we review the first episode of a new streaming show.
And then pair it with a movie from our childhood and let you know if you should watch it or avoid it.
I object. Overruled!
Now with that, what are we reviewing this week, Sean?
We are watching Showtime series entitled Your Honor, starring the wonderful Bryan Cranston. Quick synopsis, a New Orleans judge who is forced to confront his own deepest convictions when his son is involved in a hit and run that embroils an organized crime family. As a storm of vengeance, lies, and deceit threatens to engulf the entire city, Michael Desiato faces a series of increasingly impossible choices and discovers just how far an honest man will go to save his son's life.
Where does this take place?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Oh, sorry. New Orleans. Is that like a PR thing or a PC thing?
No, it's just the pronunciation thing.
New Orleans.
New Orleans. There you go.
Do I got to go back and edit and put in New Orleans?
It's better.
Let me get a soundbite. New Orleans.
It's better than I can just correct you on the podcast. Yeah.
Cause you know what? I'm just going to say New Orleans, this whole fucking podcast. Sorry, there's a swear jar. Yeah.
Not only do you have to put a coin in the jar when you swear, but you have to put a coin in the jar when you say New Orleans.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Because Americans' ears bleed when you say it wrong.
Oh, I'm sorry. New Orleans!
No, bloody up ears.
It sounds lazy saying New Orleans.
New Orleans, that's
saying. New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like Calgary and Calgary.
Right. What's the right way to say it? Calgary?
I don't know.
Calgary.
Calgary is how it's pronounced, but
it's how it's spelled, Calgary, but it's pronounced
Calgary. 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 I don't know. We'd have to ask a Calgarian. All right, let's get back to Your Honor, which is probably the furthest.
We'll just talk about Calgary for a bit.
Okay,
sure. Let's go back to Your Honor.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of people that star in this series, but we're just going to focus on the main star, which is Bryan Cranston.
Oh, that's all.
I'm not going to go through the repertoire of all the supporting cast and stuff like that, because let's be honest, you're watching it for Bryan Cranston. He's the poster child for this series. He's an executive producer. That's who's in it.
I was excited when I saw Hope Davis. I didn't think I knew. She's like the mafia's the mom in the mafia family.
No spoilers yet, buddy. Sorry.
And I was trying to think of like why Hope Davis, but for some reason, like, she does it for me. I mean, she's an amazing actress, but when I was looking back at her films, and in American Splendor and About Schmidt, she was in both those, and they kind of came out in 2002, 2003. And I'm thinking those movies must have like hit on me from somehow. But yeah, no matter what, every time I see Hope Davis, I'm in.
Two movies I haven't seen. So
you haven't seen those movies? Oh, yeah.
No, so no wonder I didn't care about Hope Davis.
Oh,
even though she's got a great, great last name. It was Todd Lewis, producer. Sorry, I just barfed in my mouth there for a second.
Pete Madden.
Peter Moffat, the creator, as well as one of the nine executive producers on this bad boy. How'd I hear about this? My manager at work, David, told me about it. Shout out, David.
David, this podcast is dedicated to the Davids. All the Davids.
These
out
are
there.
The Davids I know. I know. These are the Davids I know.
David works with me. Well, thanks, Dave.
Anyways, I heard the show was good. It's sort of been on my to watch list for a while. Just never really had the motivation to put it into motion. until, you know, using this podcast as sort of a motivation to watch some of these series that I've wanted to that nice. I just haven't yet.
You wouldn't go off David's recommendation alone. You would have to have a podcast to make you actually do it.
This episode's entitled Part One. When his teenage son Adam is involved in a tragic accident, New Orleans Judge Michael Desiato is faced with an impossible decision. How did I do on that one?
That was really good.
That was good? Okay, cool. Cool.
Okay, I got really excited.
I've broken this down into three chunks.
You wrote a lot here.
What I would think, well, there's a lot going on, and I tried to be as concise as possible, but I felt that...
Kid hit kid with car. That's the episode.
I like this, and you like...
Come on. People want to know a little bit more than that.
Nah, that's... Well, go for it.
Okay.
And then people can write in.
Would you not want me to read this? Should I just...
No, I just want
Let's you just to talk about it.
I want you to read it, and then people can write in and say if they prefer my recap or yours.
Michael Desiato, who's played by Bryan Cranston, is on a morning jog through New Orleans, stopping at a local cemetery. His son Adam, a suffering asthmatic, is just waking up back at home. Today is the anniversary of his mom's death, and Adam drives from his house with a homemade bouquet of flowers and a picture of his mom. The Baxters, a wealthy family on the other side of town, is starting their day as well. The father, Jimmy Baxter, gifts his son a new motorbike, and mom and dad stand on the street as young Rocco Baxter speeds away. Back to Michael now. He again takes a break from his jog to strangely investigate a lower-class neighborhood home, jogging away once the young tenant inside questions him. Adam anxiously pulls up to his destination, a convenience store in a dangerous part of town. He places the flowers and picture against the wall outside as he's approached by locals who quietly intimidate Adam back into his car, prompting a severe panic-induced asthma attack as he struggles to navigate his way out of the neighborhood. Now Adam's being followed. He's dropped his inhaler onto the floor of his car, and he's struggling to breathe as he battles, grasping for his medicine and driving his vehicle to safety. While distracted now, Adam then slams into an oncoming Rocco on his motorcycle, and after investigating the dying victim and further intensifying his asthma attack, Adam crawls his way back to his car to find his medicine and flees the scene of the crime. Michael ends his jog now at the city's courthouse, and he is a judge.
Whoa.
Title, Your Honor.
Yo.
So a lot happened there in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, you could hardly say it all. You were grasping for air through that thing. Mm.
I was trying to make it sort of intense because it really, really builds up until the guy gets slammed in the car.
That was, if I wasn't lying in my bed watching this on my iPad, I would have definitely been sitting at the edge of my seat. This whole episode is intense and stressful. And even though it's like, it's a literal car accident and it's a figurative car accident, you know exactly what's going to happen. As soon as the dude gets on the motorbike
and drives away,
you know exactly. And then 20 minutes later, you're still like, oh my, I can't look away.
Yeah, it's intense. This whole back and forth, we're going from the jogging judge to Adam driving to pay respects to his dead mom to Rocco on the motorcycle, you know, and it's the pacing, the editing's really well done here where, you know, it's just going back and forth and really intensifies until Rocco is hit. Even after that, you know, this Adam character is just wheezing, can't catch his breath. And I found the whole time I was watching it, I had a hard time catching my breath too. It was intoxicating in a way that, you know, you almost start having an asthma attack along with Adam as well.
Oh yeah. Going back to the initial jogging judge, Bryan Cranston, he's jogging the camera. You never see his face because he has his hood up. And to me, it seems like it's a run double. It's not really Bryan Cranston. I just feel like it's just too good running. It's like the run is running too good for Bryan. Old Bryan Cranston.
He's not Tom Cruise, right?
He's not Tom Cruise. Like Tom Cruise, that guy can run. Like
That's all he does is run.
He just runs in movies. Every movie, Tom Cruise is running. Bryan Cranston? I don't know. I just don't know if that's him. I feel like that's a run double. Uh oh.
Hey, kid. All right.
Thanks, Jesse.
My kid just interrupted our podcast. Oh. That's all right, though.
Sorry.
What the heck are these Baxter parents doing just giving a young 17-year-old? He wasn't even 17-year-old. This was a pre-birthday present. Just giving this kid a motorcycle with a shit-ass half helmet and probably no proper motorcycle license. They just sent him on his way. I blame the parents, to be honest with you.
Yeah, at least be like, okay, go around the block or tell me where you're going. I mean, maybe they feel untouchable. They don't feel like anything bad's ever going to happen. Like, I don't know, but it
seems like they have that air about them.
They
do. It was kind of like, yeah, like just we live on a level above everybody else.
Yeah, I think prior to this, they're all in the kitchen and they're talking about the future and everything looks bright and it's probably no one's really thinking
just jovial
about
breakfast, yeah, family banter. Yeah.
And,
but I blame the parents, you know, and even the dad said, this is not the 125cc dirt bike that we went riding on last summer. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah, no shit. You just gave the kid a 450 cafe racer and you sent him down New Orleans, to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Without formal training on this bike.
Check yourself before you wreck.
Yes.
Your kid.
Riding a motorcycle requires a different style of defensive driving than in a car.
What about that time where you jumped on a dirt bike with two other friends and then you guys got in a car accident?
I don't want to tell that story.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Okay. You have to cut.
I can tell it, but it's just this. Yeah. Motorbike stories. Yoo-hoo. You'd think I'd never get on a motorbike in my life again. But yeah, as kids. What grade were we in? Grade 9.
Yeah, I would say grade 9.
Again, grade 9, or yeah, the year after grade 8.
You really experimented with things in grade 9.
Yeah, junior high. I still haven't matured yet. And my friend got a 50cc little motorbike. And if you don't know anything about motorbikes, a 50cc motorbike is like the smallest motorbike imaginable. Like, they're made for kids. And anyways, he ended up getting his hands on one, and this summer we ended up just riding around our local town on the back streets and through the alleyways, going from one end to the other end, from each other's houses, kind of dodging the police on our way, you know, because we're legally not supposed to be riding this thing. We're about 14 years old, no driver's licenses.
And this is not a road bike either, isn't it? It's a dirt bike.
No, it's not a legal road bike. It's got no license on it. Even if, you know, it's, yeah, unlicensable, I think. It was almost a novelty motorcycle that you would ride in the dirt. You know, you take camping and let your 10-year-old ride this thing, right? But whatever, it's got a motor on it. It goes faster than walking. We were riding from one end of town to the other. There's three of us. Three of us on this little tiny bike,
like made for a 10-year-old.
Exactly. So we're all armed, or you know, hugged up. Anyways, there was
were
this
you guys
movie
all holding each other.
Yeah. Oh, we had to stay on. Yeah, for sure.
Who's steering?
Dave was steering. Yeah, Brian was in the middle, and I was at the very back.
And these are all made-up names, by the way, Sean's,
yeah,
to protect the innocent.
Yeah, Dave and Brian and Sean were on a motorcycle. Yeah, anyways, we T-boned a car because...
A parked car or a driving car?
No, a driving car because David blew a stop sign. No, I'm not going to point the finger at Dave.
He was driving.
Well, still, we were stupid kids.
What
we probably
role did you have in the back?
I was probably just giggling, laughing. I think I was dead weight. That was my role. I just kept the back tire from flopping up. Anyways, so we T-boned a moving car. We weren't going super fast, and neither was the car, thankfully. But yeah, we T-boned the car. David went flying pretty far. Broke his femur bone. That was nasty. Brian kind of slammed up against the hood of the car a little bit more than everybody else, and he got a bit of road rash on his face. And then me on the very back, I got like 3 stitches in my knee. It was nothing. And they absorbed most of the impact for me, you know. There was a local football practice going. It happened right in front of the local high school, and there was a football practice going on at the time, and all the football players came running out and, you know, trying to save the day and shit. And
did you know people in the, like, did you, was this
on the football team?
Yeah, did you know people?
Probably. I probably knew a couple of them, like who their names anyways, amazing. You know, but did they know me? No. But it was bad because one guy, David, went to one hospital and Brian went to the other hospital, and they sent me with Brian, and I had to, and me being sort of the least hurt out of all of them, I had the unfortunate responsibility of calling everybody else's parents and letting them know what happened. So that was awesome.
And whose parents were the most pissed?
No, I don't know. To be honest with you, they all took it pretty well. I think all of them were like, okay. You know, and just,
right,
it is what it is. And they went off to the hospital. I don't remember anybody yelling at me or anything like that.
Even your own parents.
Even my own parents didn't yell at me. No, I don't remember what my punishment was, though. I think maybe the fact of getting in a car accident and all that was punishment enough. I don't know.
The 3 stitches were enough. That was your natural consequence.
Yeah, a little bit more than that. I was bruised up a bit more. But yeah, no, definitely Dave and Brian got the worst of it. That's for sure.
So how, based on all the your experience and the fact that you have a bike yourself, would you, this
I used
whole
to.
Initial,
no, no bike
you got
anymore.
Rid of your bike?
I did, yeah.
About a year ago? 2 years ago?
2 or 3 years ago, yeah. Yeah, I had my second
child. You
sold
the bike, got the minivan.
Yeah, traded it up for a minivan.
So how stressed were you with this first bit of this episode then?
Not really, because they didn't cut to Rocco too much. You know what I mean? They did one cutaway to him, kind of like, and the wind in his face, and then they left alone. And then all they did was focus on Adam and his sort of asthma attack after the asthmatic Adam. And man, just watching this guy struggle to catch his breath, like I said, I felt I was short of breath. It was well done in the construction of the scene, because it certainly put me in the shoes of Adam for 5 minutes. A couple things make me think, you know, his mom was killed in a pretty rough part of New Orleans. What the heck was she doing down there to begin with?
Yeah, first, they don't make anything apparent in the beginning. Like, you don't know that the guy running is Bryan Cranston necessarily, though you can pretty much figure it out. You kind of can guess that that's his dad, but there's no indication at that point that that is his dad. So you've got these three characters you're seeing in the first part of the episode, and you don't know if there is a connection at all. But yeah, and there's so, and that's the biggest mystery, I guess, is like, where, why is his, how did his mom die, and why here?
And I think it happened when he was young, and from some hints later on in the show, I feel that Adam was with her at the time that she was killed. And I think that's kind of why he's a little off kilter. I don't know. I think he might have witnessed his mom die. He's a little off. He's a little unstable, I think. He's not just asthmatic. He's a bit of,
And do you think this is like a series of unfortunate events that he just happens to go to this neighborhood, and unfortunately he just happens to maybe run across the wrong people, or there's some sort of bad blood with his mom's death or something like that? Like, do you think this group of teenagers who scare him back in his car and chase him out of the neighborhood, do you think there's some sort of like history there? Or, I mean, that's a good, I don't know. I guess there has to be. Like, it just doesn't.
No, like, I think he's just he's a white guy in the wrong part of town.
Yeah. I guess we're so, I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
We're not privy to that stuff, right? I mean,
I haven't experienced it myself, but I guess,
yeah, we've never experienced that level of segregation, you know. Right. Our friend that lives in the States has talked about it before when he lived in California. You know, there's the white neighborhood, the Mexican neighborhood, you know, Spanish neighborhood, and there's the African American neighborhood, and they don't mix.
Right.
you know, whereas up in Canada, I mean, we're just a big mishmash pot of everything. Well,
and I'm
right?
just thinking, like,
well, we've got our certain sections for sure, but it's not to the point where, like, you don't dare go there.
East
right?
Van is like a like huge for just like heroin and pretty major scale as far as like homelessness and drug addiction and
but
mental
a couple
health.
Of white guys, suburban white guys like us, could safely walk. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
East Vancouver without any sort of intimidation.
I can't think of anywhere, and we're lucky. I guess we're blessed and we're fortunate. And I just can't think of walking anywhere in Vancouver where, I mean, they're all like anything can happen. Anything bad can happen, obviously.
And there are bad parts.
There are bad
right?
places more than others, but I can't, like, you know. Yeah, I can't see us like just walking through any place, but you know,
maybe. I couldn't even tell you like, hey, what part of the Lower Mainland should I not? Right. I wouldn't even be able to, like, hey, oh, you know, you better not go XYZ, yeah. you know, but
I should talk to my Surrey friends in Wally because a couple of them grew up in Wally, and maybe Wally used to be that.
Maybe we don't have much Surrey experience, so maybe we're a little removed from that.
Local references no one gets.
Back to the show. Scene of the crime. They went all out. Got a little gory here at one part. Oh, this kid's like burbling and barfing up blood. He's still alive. You know, he's asking Adam for help. His legs all twisted and backwards, and his head's cracked on the pavement. And and then for some reason, Adam thinks that CPR is gonna save this kid.
Asmar Adam is like in shock. Like, he just doesn't seem he's in clear. Like, he kind of crawls over to the guy, and he's just watching him. And you can Rocco, bike riding Rocco, is basically choking on his own blood. And so Asmar Adam starts getting his hook finger in there, trying to, like, I don't know, like hook blood. And then he realizes that's not working. And then so he delicately, gently, and passionately gives him like kiss CPR, where he's just like mwah, mwah, his lips. And then in exchange, dying Rocco just barfs blood all over Asmar Adam. And it just adds to this whole like intense last 20 minutes of this car chase / bike.
And the sound design on it is pretty gross too. Like, you can hear it all like burbly and stuff, and it's just I think he must have thought he was like choking on his tongue or something. I don't know why he was sticking his fingers in buddy.
A lot of interesting
decisions. Adam's clearly in a state of shock. He's not thinking properly. The guy, like, I don't know. His car's already a giant piece of shit, and then he just smashed into this motorcycle, yet he's able to sort of drive away. I don't think this car would be drivable after this, yet he was able to get in his Volvo.
At least if it was drivable, it would have been smoking, or there would have been
chitty chitty bang bang.
He wouldn't be able
away.
To just drive around nonchalantly without people going, what the fuck just happened to that car?
Yeah, and it's like leaking motor oil and stuff like that, that was a little difficult for me to believe that his car would still work after that, at least to the point where he was able to drive away, and
without causing more attention to himself.
Now in court, Michael shows his compassionate intellect by cross-examining a police officer and proving he was falsifying arrest details of a single black mother. Adam, still in full panic mode, is clamoring to get home, stopping for much-needed gas, but also exposing himself to security cameras. Finally now home, Adam clumsily cleans himself and his blood-soaked clothing, only to overload the wash machine, causing it to flood the laundry room floor. Michael finally makes it home to greet an unresponsive Adam, and Michael comforts Adam into calming down enough to explain the situation. Adam has killed a motorist and fled the scene, committing a hit and run. The judge and son work on the story and logistics before packing it up and deciding to head to the police station.
Yeah, everything is kind of everything after the accident, or maybe even before, everything is filmed in a way of like stacking evidence of what just happened.
Yeah, like they're very conscious to show you that Adam was captured by the security cameras.
Who's watching? Who's watching Adam leave the house?
The nosy neighbor saw everything. She's watching all the time. Yeah.
So it's all this stuff going, oh man, like, how is he going to get away with this?
Yeah, and even the the thugs that sort of chased him out of the neighborhood, they were in an SUV sort of following him and intimidating him. And they saw everything, like I said, and drove away too, right?
Yeah.
Just lots of people saw some things, and Adam was not good at cleaning up this mess anyway. So.
Okay, I got a puffer question now.
A what?
A puffer, like an asthma puffer question.
Okay.
Okay. You never had asthma, so you can't speak from
I've
experience.
I've had breathing issues before where I've needed an inhaler for a short period of time.
Jeez, this show was all about you then, hey? Bike rider, puffer. Okay, here's the question. Adam wakes up with a girl, right? Sexy time. He takes a puff of his asthma inhaler. So is that a morning thing? Is it a morning ritual? You got to take a puff
to get yourself going? I would think so. Okay. I honestly, it was such a long time ago as a young kid, and it wasn't sort of like I was take it when having reactions or anything.
Let's make some assumptions. Or maybe his heart's beating because he just had some sexy time in the morning, or maybe this is just a morning routine, takes a puff, gets him on his way, got his inhaler. Okay. He's driving. He gets himself in this community where he's not welcome. He starts getting stressed out. He needs to take a puff from his inhaler because I assume his anxiety. I'm assuming it's not necessarily the time of day, but more about the factors that's leading him to needing a puff from his inhaler because he's stressed out. So he's driving his car. He needs to get, he's scared. So he's reaching for his inhaler. This is why the accident happens, because the inhaler is now fallen on the passenger side front area, off the seat. So he's reaching for it. And this is why he hits the bike guy. He hits the kid. He takes a puff. And once he does that, he kind of relaxes, but he's not seen taking a puff ever again.
Right.
But to me, like, that just is the beginning of his freaking stressful day. And I wanted it to be more than just a plot device. Like, the reason why he hit the bike, because he was stressed out and the inhaler dropped, and that's what happened. But he did so many more. Like, he took the cell phone and he like threw the Mark Rocco's cell phone in the river, and he drove up to a gas station. Some guy like honked at him, and then he saw police officers, and he got like and then he freaking floods his laundry room with the washer. And maybe because my house is flooded before, like, that freaking stressed me out. And he doesn't take any puff. I'm thinking, where's the consistency here? He should be addicted to that freaking inhaler.
Right. Like, it was debilitating for him until he would take a puff for a couple of these circumstances in the beginning. And now he's in just as bad a circumstance after the fact, trying to clean up this mess. And you're saying that no puffs.
Yeah.
Maybe the director thought they showed it enough, and it's sort of just a wink, wink. Know what I mean?
I don't know. Happening
in the background. Or maybe it's just weak plot hole.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe two puffs and you don't need any more puffs. Doesn't matter what happens. Maybe it's just a two puff max. I don't know.
Puff puff pass, right? They've got quite the nosy neighbor. She likes to watch Adam. She likes to watch Michael. Have you ever had a nosy neighbor like that, where you'd always have to maybe like close your blinds, or you'd look out, or they'd always be watching or scowling? Or no, never had a nasty nosy neighbor.
We had a neighbor who kind of seemed to know everyone's business. They moved away, but she always seemed to kind of have like, and it was always like, oh, I saw, you know, Harold drive at 2 a.m. last night. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure.
Oh, great. They were chatty.
I think they were just, they were just always maybe cognizant of when people were going and coming from their house. So I guess to your point, yes, I have.
My neighbor shot my Cocker Spaniel when I was a kid.
Your neighbor shot Cocker Spaniel?
You remember Pepper? My cockapoo?
Let me just think back to the Truth Seeker episode. Yeah, I remember Pepper.
Yeah. Come on, our first podcast, Pepper. We brought him up. Anyways, my neighbor shot him.
Dead?
With a 20... Shot him in the...
Pepper lived.
Yep, shot him in the back thigh with a 22 rifle, and said he thought he was a bear, even though we had lived next door to the guy forever and knew we had a dog, and my dog couldn't have been more than, you know... foot and a half high at that time.
He said it was a bear.
Yeah, the guy's a piece of shit.
What do you think Pepper was doing? Do you think Pepper was just pissing him off? Do you think Pepper was in his garbage?
Pepper had a tendency to get out every now and then, and right. he would just wander the neighborhood. You know,
I blame the owners, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. We should take some responsibility, but at the same time, you know.
So Pepper was getting out.
You don't knowingly shoot your neighbor's dog because they took a dump on your lawn. You know, that's a little excessive.
Yeah.
That kind of strains your neighborly relations.
Do you think he wanted to hit Pepper, kill Pepper, and then just bury it in his backyard and never say anything? But the fact that he just like maimed him and Pepper was allowed to run away, that he had to come up with like a story. Like, do you think his objective was to hurt him?
I have no idea. I was so young, and I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't even tell you what this guy looked like. So right. I couldn't go on to give you any sort
of
personality. Yeah, let's call my dad and ask him.
Yeah, this is a segment of asshole, John's dad.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Adam's mom used to do the laundry before she passed away, right? He's not too good at doing it.
Sorry, what?
I'm back to the show now. I'm back to the show now. Let's circle back.
So the mom that's passed.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's obvious that she used to do the laundry in the house.
It's obvious because Adam doesn't completely do the laundry.
He right. is just useless. I'm starting to find this guy pretty pathetic, to be honest with you.
He needs to chillax.
Maybe.
He gets home. Yeah, he's acting like he's a 10-year-old trying to hide the evidence. But spilling cookie crumbs everywhere he goes. And he throws all his stuff in the washer and dryer and then just starts randomly pushing buttons. And I don't know, he floods the laundry room.
I think because he put his sneakers in there too. But anyway, and then when it was making a bunch of noise and he comes back to investigate, he's all like scared to look in the laundry room and stuff like that. I'm like, you could tell the washing machine's on the front. Like, this guy is just paranoid Patty. Like, I think there's something else other than asthma going on with Adam.
I think
the asthma is like a cause and effect. Like, he has serious
stress,
panic attacks, anxiety. And because of those he loses breath and becomes, or you know, has an asthma attack.
Interesting.
It is interesting. Just like this show.
Oh, and why don't you take us home?
Driving to the police station, the two discuss the likelihood of Adam's prosecution and the incarceration he should expect. Michael leaves his son in the car to set up the details of Adam coming forward. Waiting inside the lobby of the station, Michael gets a glimpse of Jimmy and Gina Baxter, the mourning parents of the deceased motorist Rocco. Piecing it all together quickly, Michael abandons his choice to surrender Adam to the law and leaves the police station. Pressuring Adam to get back into the car, Michael explains that Adam has killed the son of the head of the most notorious crime family in the history of New Orleans, Jimmy Baxter. Once home, Michael cleans up Adam's sloppy job of hiding the evidence, and the two agree to cover it up and never discuss it with anyone. While cleaning, Michael hears the Baxter's statement on the local news, and Jimmy Baxter vows the driver will be found. The episode concludes with the Baxters visiting the scene of the crime, where one of their henchmen discovers a crucial piece of evidence missed by the police, Adam's inhaler, or puffer, as Russ likes to call it.
Is it henchman or
Henchman.
Is it henchman?
Well, I don't know.
Damn it, I couldn't get my joke out.
Concierge?
Is it, I was trying to make a Yellowstone joke. I couldn't say it. Quick. A hired hand? Cattle boy? What do we call it?
Wrangler?
Ranch hand. Okay, here we go. Is it henchman or ranch hand?
I think in this case, it's either, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's Rip.
I hate myself.
Yeah, whatever. It's the gangster's right hand man. Whatever you want. You can only assume that he's his main bad guy.
Yeah. Episode over. I want to add to our Shawshank Redemption tally, where this is another show that we've reviewed who reference Shawshank.
Why do you think Shawshank? I got a note here. Maybe a movie about a wrongfully incarcerated man escaping prison. Where does that tie into this show?
Well, here you go. I mean, somebody's going to get wrong. Oh, yeah, good point. So he did do it. So if he went to jail, he's going to jail. I mean, yeah.
But now we're not going to jail anymore, at least not in this first episode. Adam, you know, they're going to cover it up.
Well, I don't know, but again, like the whole episode is filmed as in like a stacking of evidence. So it feels like no matter what Bryan Cranston can do to hide this and use his influence, like the truth is going to get out. And this kid,
yeah, you know,
is
this
going
kid
down.
Is screwed. And yeah, it's just like, why you should have just stayed at the scene of the crime.
Did he talk to 911? Like when he called, so when
he
he's on, so he's on the scene of the crime, he uses the kid Rocco's phone to call 911. He speaks to them.
Yeah, he spoke of what he could speak out. I think he just
said his
no.
Inhaler on the scene of the crime with his, and inhalers have their name.
Leaves
on
the inhaler,
it.
But remembers like to take pills, the cell phone.
Right, your name is on an inhaler.
Yeah, no, it's you have to go get a prescription for it and all that. Yeah, you can't
he's on video at the gas station. There's just so many. There's just
Gangsta Squad song.
Yeah, I think.
Adam's hoop, man.
Adam's hoop. Adam's going to jail.
I don't know. And then Michael is going to get caught up in, you know, having covered it up. Oh, anyways. Yeah.
Or does he cover it up to a point that, I don't know. Yeah. What could he do? He can't go to jail himself because there's no evidence to suggest that he was there. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So yeah, Adam's sitting on the couch with his feet up watching Shawshank Redemption while his dad is cleaning up everything. Do you think his dad just realizes, Adam, you're fucking pathetic at cleaning anything up. Just sit back. I'm going to take care of this. Or like, come on, Adam, get off your ass. Help your dad clean up
but
a bit.
I guess to your point, like he's like, I'm going to take care of you, son. I'm going to, you know, maybe there is like,
again, back to the babying thing,
trauma
right?
With the mom. So he just, you know, all he wants to do is take care of his kid. And this is a good example of you know, I couldn't do it with your mom. So let me take care of you. I don't know.
Let me hold your hand this whole time. Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wanted to know more of, I mean, I guess we'll find out if we continue to watch this. What's so scary about this crime family? But, you know, Michael was very scared or thrown off or, you know, his decision to, screw this, you know, came really quick. I want to sort of know a little bit more backstory, or maybe get a scene of this Jimmy Baxter being a super badass gangster. You know, show me why you're so scared of this guy.
Right.
But maybe that's coming. One could hope.
I think we haven't seen the full extent of the misery they will cause. Even the face of this guy, like he's such a good character face, but he looks like a, like his face is made of candle wax and he's melted just a little bit on both sides. And he has that kind of gangster quality about him.
Yeah, it's stereotypical Italian mafia.
Yeah, he feels dangerous to me. I wouldn't want to wake up with a light on me, hand tied, gagged with him sitting across from me. Or would I? I don't know.
And I, again, with the Volvo being able to function and drive away from the scene of the crime, I also have a hard time believing that where there's a death at the scene of a crime, that the whole crime scene would not have been roped off, which it wasn't. These people were able just to drive. There's still like blood on the sidewalk. This right. Would have been a totally
Rocco's parents go there the same night, right? It's
yeah,
the same night.
Yeah. And I don't believe that. In the pitch black darkness under one street light that this henchman was able to find this inhaler and that the police didn't originally pick it up.
And because that was another weird thing, like this accident happened during the day. So it's like this corner of this neighborhood. Obviously, you know, there's something going on with this neighborhood. But at the same time, there are buildings at each corner, but nothing, like no. Nobody comes out of their house. Nobody is around. Nobody sees this.
It's just like a desolate.
Yeah. It's like an old
corner
haunted.
Yeah. I don't know. The slums.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. There's just like, yeah. Despite it being like really well executed as far as the suspense and the buildup, there's definitely a lot of questions where you're calling and you're wondering if these are poor decisions made within the writing or if it's just things that are just going to be answered later. But yeah.
Man, this shit is awesome.
You suck.
Now this is the part where we're gonna give you a rating and let you know whether we think you should keep watching Your Honor or whether you should skip it. I'll let Russ start. We've got three categories: character, story, and interest. We rate them out of five. We can give half points. Russell, what'd you do for character?
I gave it a 2. The characters for me weren't 100% believable. The whole scene of Bryan Cranston in court, he's the judge, and it's felt very like NBC procedural network TV-ish. Like, he starts like, not, you know, there's only a few moments here in the courtroom, but at the same time, you know, the audience is led to believe that not only is he a great judge, but he also does the work of a defense attorney. And it just seems like he's, I don't know, it just seems like, wow, what a brilliant guy. And he's also looking out for the little man, and he can look at all sides. Like, I don't know. I would have rather seen a nice mundane example of him at the work. I didn't need to see him being a genius judge.
Do judges normally do that? I have no courtroom experience. That seems like something that the lawyers would do. And he kind of stepped into the a defense attorney's position there. Yeah,
that seemed just like show, like just for show, like it just is like we're like just make good TV, so we're putting in. I mean, a lot of courtroom drama is just made to be good TV, and it would never actually happen.
It's a lot more boring than what they show us,
but that just seemed to be like for a show that I'm trying to take a little bit more seriously than just a procedural on network TV. I thought that was just kind of cheese.
They've grounded the whole show in reality. You know, it's not outlandish in any way. And then they do these little things where it's kind of like, you've lost me a bit.
Yeah. So and because everything is just very on the surface at this point, there's no real deep dive into any character within the first episode. I can't really give this a fair rating. But I'm giving it a 2. Fair or not?
Fair enough. I gave it a 2.5. It was good acting, but, you know, none of them are overly engaging to me. Like you said, you know, none of them are standing out. If anything, you know, Adam sort of being totally pathetic brought it down a little bit for me. I had a hard time just watching him as the episode went on. But again, I that's his character. Maybe he's supposed to be pathetic and like that. So if that was the case, then Adam, kudos to you.
You really pull off that whole pathetic thing.
Yo. I felt that, like I said before, I felt like the gangsters needed maybe a little scene or snippet in there just to show us how badass he is or why they're so scary. But again, maybe that's coming, because we're definitely nowhere near as afraid of these gangsters as Michael is. So it'd be nice to know a little bit more of why he was scared of them. Oh, yeah. 2.5. Not put any of these guys on a T-shirt.
For story, out of 5, I gave it a 3. Nothing mind-blowing like we were talking before, but well-executed, like I've repeated many times. I don't know if I have much else to say, but really just thought it was well-paced. And,
I give story a 2.5. Again, nothing new here, I felt, while I was watching them. Again, I was trying to bang my brain on what other shows were like this, and I couldn't off the top of my head without doing any research. I still haven't done any research. I can't tell you exactly what it's like that, but for some reason I've got this feeling like I've seen a movie like this before. I've seen a show like this before where someone gets wrapped up with the gangsters at a wrong place in the wrong time.
Judgment Night.
I felt like the setup of the accident was awesome and the pacing was great, but then after that the show just... Did you just fart?
Yeah. did it could you hear it?
Did you just fart? Because I totally could hear it.
Yeah.
That's good. I hope it makes it into the soundboard here. That'd be hilarious. We all just like crank up the
just a real wet one.
Yeah, I'll crank up the gain there for a little bit. Car accident was good. The pacing up to that was good. But then I felt it just kind of, it didn't dip drastically after that, but it did dip after that. So yeah, 2.5. What about interest? Now, how's your interest on this show?
Well, I will definitely watch the next episode. It's a limited series, so it's, you know, we're not committing to anything long term. So I think if things steadily build, I will definitely finish this show off. If it starts to get more silly and maybe it doesn't feel genuine enough, I might tune out. But at this point, I'm giving it a 3 for interest.
Same here. 3. I'm not chomping at the bit to watch the rest of them, but like you, I am interested in watching episode 2. How far I'll go again after that, I don't know. Again, it's all in the hands of your honor to keep me going.
Right. You want to see how Bryan Cranston's going to figure this all out.
Yeah, you know that the next episode there's going to be some repercussions or something's got to be figured out or someone's going to get busted or whatever. So you kind of want to know. I watched this almost a week ago and I wasn't sweating bullets trying to get to episode 2.
Like you want to throw up?
Okay.
Now we're on to temperature check. Oh, wait. Russ, okay, right. You said you're going to watch... Yeah, never mind. I was just going to say, do we recommend people... But you said you're going to watch 2, and I said, I'll watch 2.
I think we made a lot of recommendations during... recommendations? No, guesses. What are we trying to say?
Predictions.
Yeah. We made predictions along the way, so we're good with that.
So. Yeah.
I got a fart again. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, I heard that one.
I don't know what I ate. What did I eat?
Russ had broccoli tonight, everybody. So
I did have broccoli for lunch. I made a nice little stir fry.
This is a temperature check now where we discuss shows that we reviewed in the past and kind of check up on them. At least the one we did last time, which was 30 Coins. Russ, did you ever watch episode 2 of 30 Coins?
I did not watch more of 30 Coins.
I absolutely have no interest. I see the poster for now and I just giggle now when I see it. I'm just like, yeah, I'll dig a big pass.
A big P for 30 Coins. After COVID's done, maybe we should all just have like a view party and just, you know.
Of episode two.
Sure. I think it'd be one where you'd want to throw popcorn at the screen and you'd want to laugh with people. It's something, you know, the whole family can get into.
Nice. And I take it you're still watching WandaVision every Friday. Yes.
You're caught up to WandaVision as well?
Yeah. It was all Agatha.
Yeah. Oh, it was Agatha the whole time. Or what's the song? It was Agatha.
Agatha, hack something all the whole time. Yeah.
I'll be back.
Now's the time where we go back in time and review an older film from our childhood. This week, we are reviewing Martin Scorsese's remake of Cape Fear, starring Robert De Niro, Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange, and Juliette Lewis. There's a couple others in there, Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum.
Both Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum were in the original 1962.
Right. Who directed the original? Alfred Hitchcock?
Gosh.
Who directed the original?
I don't know. I could look that up, but I just know that those guys were, like, three actors were brought back from the original and were in this one as well.
Nice.
Which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do you think you will know a director from 1962? Like, you'll... So the director was J. Lee Thompson. Nope. Ring a bell?
Nope.
Let me tell you what else Thompson did. No. He did The Guns of Navarone. He did Woman in a Dressing Gown.
Oh, that one.
He did Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh!
So he did a lot of movies.
He did Battlefield Earth.
With John Travolta.
And Barry Peppers.
His last movie was in 1989.
Wow.
He did Death Wish 4, The Crackdown.
Ooh.
Oh my God, we got to watch that. 1987.
Cha-ching.
With Charles Bronson. We got to do Bronson, Death Wish 4, The Crackdown.
Do Bruce Willis's remake of it. I've seen it. Cape Fear. I love this movie, man. It was great.
I had no recollection
of it. I love the homage to the old. I've never seen the original, but you can tell some of the the stylistic choices that Martin did were throwback homages to it. And he did some cool stylistic stuff in here. And the score, the music score is just pounding the whole time. It's great. It's scary. It's scary in itself. So Robert De Niro, like, my God, he's amazing in this movie. Did he win the Oscar for this one?
Ooh, why would you do that to me? Awesome. Let me look it up.
I can look it up. I'll look it up. You talk. Okay. You talk.
Wow. Okay, here's the I had no recollection of what I know I had seen this before, because I could, as soon as the boat shit started happening, I'm like, okay, yeah, I've seen this before. But I couldn't remember it. So I thank you for pairing Cape Fear with this show. I definitely enjoyed watching this. I enjoyed this probably more than Your Honor.
I'll give you that. I enjoyed watching it more than I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, I just liked everybody in it. It was cool to see. We've done What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and so it was neat to see kind of the start of Juliette Lewis in this one. I thought she did a great job. I was wondering how old she actually was when they filmed this movie, because there is some, like, she's gonna do some creepy shit, and even just as a young actress coming into her first film and having to, like, work alongside Nolte and De Niro and Lang, like, that must have been, like, super intimidating.
So was this her first film?
Yeah, I think this is one of her first films. Let me just see here.
It was one of them. I think she might have been in Christmas Vacation before this.
Oh, with Chevy Chase?
Yeah.
Why didn't I know that?
I don't know.
You're right. She did National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation in 1989. So 2 years. So she had already worked with Chevy Chase. So she had already worked with the master. Right. And so De Niro was nothing compared to the Chevy. So you're right. So she's,
oh God, so she's been in some things. She did some bit parts in The Facts of Life and The Wonder Years.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. She did still more. She was pretty young then too. So,
yeah.
I'm not a big Juliette Lewis fan, but she's very, very tolerable in this movie. So
here we go again.
Yeah. Well, it seems the older she got, the more I can't stand her. So the young Juliette Lewis, good. Old Juliette Lewis, bad.
One of the crazy things, as far as, like, looking at this in a 2021 lens, is that, like, the whole crux of it is that De Niro's super pissed off that Nolte left out evidence because he was his defense attorney, and he went to jail for 14 years, and he wouldn't have gone to jail for 14 years if Nolte didn't
bury the evidence.
And the evidence was that this girl was promiscuous.
Had three lovers in 1 month.
Oh yeah, exactly. So obviously, so back then, like, the idea that in the court system,
that if you're promiscuous, your rapist would get away scot clean. Yeah,
it's just like is insane. And I mean, I'm sure this is, like, there, if this isn't fully a real reality, it has aspects of realism, but it's just so unfortunate. I'm so glad we've come so far, but that is just wow.
Oh, and all the cigarette smoking in this.
Oh, yeah. They, like, right in the house, too.
Yeah, right. As soon as she wakes up, Jessica Lange lights a cigarette. They're, like, laying in bed at night, discussing, like, having a smoke. Like, their house must have just stunk. Like,
And you don't think about it, because we are in most places, and I think it definitely in North America, has come so far with, like, the laws on smoking and, like, not smoking in restaurants. But you think of when we were kids, like, when we were in high school, you could go, you know, you could smoke in a restaurant.
You could smoke in an airplane when we were kids. You could smoke in an airplane,
yeah.
Could you imagine being stuck in an airplane?
Oh, my God.
Oh.
But I don't think it, like, I don't know. I think people just accept it. Like, my stepdad smoked in the house. Like, I think it was just, I remember going for lunch with, like, most of our friends smoked. And we would go for lunch every day in high school. And
Murphy's.
We would go to, like, cafe in Murphy's. And everyone would just smoke. And I don't know.
That's all we did 16. Was smoke and drink coffee.
Yeah. And I would drink iced tea and eat fries, my basket of fries. But yeah, it's just, crazy.
You're so smart to never... You're like one of the few that never got pressured into starting to smoke.
I'm sure I was pressured, but I just never, it never made sense to me.
I absolutely regret.
I regret.
I absolutely regret ever smoking. It fucked up the way I talk. And now it's just really bad for your lips.
Before I smoke cigarettes.
And your vocabulary is not good for you. No, really. Anybody out there thinking of quitting smoking, just do it. Just do it. Alan Carr's The Easy Way. It was written in the late 1970s.
Is that how you quit?
Yeah. It's what finally, I got the audio version of it. Alan Carr's, C-A-R-R-S. Anyone out there struggling to quit smoking, Alan Carr's The Easy Way.
Mm-hmm.
Read it or get it on audio file.
What do you think about it? Helped you?
It just really breaks down the psychology of why you smoke and why you started to smoke to begin with. And when you really understand that, you really understand the addiction that you have and I guess how to face it head on, you know, like when I was having withdrawal symptoms, I sort of embraced them rather than let them take me down, because while I was having them, I realized that that was my body getting rid of the toxins and sort of, you know, having those withdrawal symptoms, wanting that was my body getting rid of the nicotine and stuff, you know. So I kind of looked at the silver lining on some of the shitty things you go through when you quit smoking. So, yeah. Nice. But yeah.
Could you apply that to other addictions, or is it mainly for smoking?
I think some of the psychology stuff you could, but no, it's definitely, you know, the chemicals and stuff that were involved with smoking, you know.
Because I love broccoli.
Do you? It makes you fart.
Can't get enough of it.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you could apply the same thing to say alcohol or drug addiction. Like, it might work. I'm not sure. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Best quote of the movie is when Robert Mitchum says, "Pardon me, all over the place." That was my favorite.
Pardon me, all over the place.
I feel I want to use that in regular conversation. Next time I make a mistake, I'm just going to say, "Well, pardon me, all over the place." How old was Juliette Lewis in this? Because that whole weird scene when
she had to be at least 18 for them to kiss, I would say.
Man, that was so weird. That was so creepy. Done so well, but.
Yeah. Just, I don't know. Yeah. When he's sticking his tongue down her throat, you're just kind of like,
where she, I guess, so she's in summer school because she was caught smoking weed.
Yeah.
And this is her, the whole rebellious, and why there's kind of like this rift between her and her dad specifically.
She's just going through her rebellious teenage. Yeah. She's, you know, coming to terms with her sexuality and puberty and this and that, right? Yeah.
But I mean, there's a series of stupid decisions that Nick Nolte makes in this film, which questions his whole ability to deal with the law. But they're being stalked, and they're being stalked by someone who raped and assaulted a 16-year-old. So he sends his 15-year-old to summer school, just like she goes to this weird underground theater where no one else is, and meets for the first time face to face Robert De Niro's character. And he just, I mean, he's, you know, he's an attractive guy, but I don't know, like, he's also, he seems maybe 30, 40 in this. How old do you think he's in this?
Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
He's probably 40.
Yeah. So you've got someone playing 15 years old, and she's taken by him. And I guess, I mean, he's an attractive guy. He's charismatic, but
he's the bad boyfriend, right?
But he's a 40-year-old. I don't think 15-year-olds dig 40-year-olds.
No. But her attraction to him, I think, is a deeper thing of her against her parents, right?
Yeah, 100%. And he's playing that. She comes in and he's smoking weed. So right away, that's the connection to like her rebellious side, because that's why she's here in the first place. But and she figures it out. She figures out who he is, but she's still like in it. She's like, and then he like freaking sticks his thumb in her mouth. So she was born in 1973. So she was 18 years old when this movie came out in 1991.
Hmm.
And I'm assuming maybe it came out late that year. So maybe they, you know, so was she 18 when they filmed it? That's the question.
I bet you he was going for the Oscars. I bet this was like a winter release movie, probably. Yeah. I bet. Anyways, so. Yeah, it's great movie. I didn't, you know, Nick Nolte's kind of seems like he's fallen off the ugly tree and hit the every branch on the way down. But back in the day,
he was sexiest man alive. In,
was he?
Yeah, 1992. And like a year after this, he was sexiest man alive of People Magazine. Nick Nolte.
Look better looking than I remember.
Right. Yeah, everyone ages differently. But yeah, I thought he did a good job. I mean, aside from being a terrible character, bad decision making, like great job. I thought they all did a great job in this film.
Yeah, yeah. Well acted all around, everybody. Yeah.
And I loved all like the startle cuts. Like I don't know if that's like I feel like you sent it right off the top as far as Martin Scorsese doing a bunch of like artistic choices, some flares and, but like there's a lot of like really cool, like they're all sitting around the dinner table going, everything's fine. And then suddenly it cuts to the phone ringing and everyone just jumps. And there was a lot of like really kind of startle cuts.
And then the camera would like, whoosh, yeah, you know, yeah. like track right into the phone ringing, you know, with a big Dutch tilt.
That was really cool editing, really cool storytelling device.
Yes, Thelma Schoonmaker, the editor, God rest her soul. Yeah. She was Marty Scorsese's editor until she passed away.
She's really good. She did most of his stuff.
She did all his stuff until she passed away.
When did she pass?
I believe it was about 4 years ago, three or 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's cool like to see Martin Scorsese, like Robert De Niro was his guy. I think like in 9 films or something. And then this is like one of the last, and then I think they did Casino together. And then it's like Martin does like a film with Nicolas Cage. And then he kind of like gets onto Leo.
It's Leo DiCaprio.
And then it's Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah. Yeah. It's his new Robert De Niro. Yeah.
And obviously he did, The Irishman with Robert De Niro, but,
which I still haven't seen.
No, I haven't seen
the either. Only reason I don't watch that movie is because it's 3.5 hours long. It's so hard to be like, okay, I'm going to watch this now, knowing that it's probably a multiple viewing experience to get through it. There's no way I'm sitting through it 3.5 hours in one go.
It's a commitment, man.
Yeah, that's just it. It's like, maybe I'll start poking away at it in the man cave. I don't know. Yeah, like
not
that.
Only have I heard it's long, I've also heard that the de-aging technology wasn't great.
It's distracting in a way.
But I have heard that it is an amazing movie, so I don't know why I haven't.
Yeah, I don't know. I love everything Martin Scorsese does, so I don't know why I haven't watched it yet. I think it's the 3.5 hour runtime that it's a bit of a hard sell on me.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say part of me all over the place, and I'm also gonna start drinking Jim Beam and Pepto Bismol.
Jim Beam and Pepto Bismol. Yeah, nice. Nice. Yeah, this movie is great. Again, I'll echo your thoughts. I enjoyed this a little bit more than Your Honor, despite their almost 30-year difference. Cape Fear, I think that this movie, you could put this in the, what's the you could put this in a time capsule, lock it away, and watch it in 100 years, and I think it's still great. Like there's no CGI, and not that I thought of or anything like that. So, you know, it doesn't date itself. It's just a great, great thriller, great story. And yeah, really, really well acted.
Yeah. Really well acted. I thought it got really comical at the end, and I don't know again, if that was just the intention or just maybe just watching it now, but even just the cuts, like they used a lot of every time they turned their head, there was a lot of kind of like almost cartoony type sound effects.
Yeah, there's a part at the end where Robert De Niro turns and actually speaks to camera like he's in a courtroom. You know, they're in a sinking houseboat. He's got
Bugs Bunny kind of.
Yeah, and I did notice, you know, when he whips his hair, there's a couple of whip pans in there. And then also when Nick Nolte, there's a pair of handcuffs to a brass pole, and Nick Nolte's able to get it around Robert De Niro's ankle, and then it cuts right after Nick Nolte does it. It sort of cuts to Nick Nolte's face looking up at Robert De Niro, and he's like, he kind of like growls like a dog, you know, and it's probably totally Nick Nolte with his raspy voice, but it sounds like a dog growl. He's like, you know, and it's just like, yeah, I even rewound it and watched it again. I was like, yeah. So I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. They do go a little over the top.
If it's the campiness of it or
I think the movie lives at a little level just. Yeah, just above reality. You know what I mean? Just one level up.
So and at that point, they're like, let's just have fun with it. Like, you know, we're in it now. I don't know.
Maybe. Or it's just like, let's amp this up as much as we can, right?
Like, those are the decisions Jim Carrey would have made if he did this. Like, he would have done that throughout the whole movie. He would have acted that way. But it's just in this last 10 minutes of the movie, suddenly Robert De Niro is channeling, like, you know, Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, and just kind of get in full character. And
yeah, and there's no way in hell some houseboat agency is letting the public take these things out during squall season. I mean, it's like they've got a houseboat from the Shuswap and they're trying to run it down the Colorado River.
I question that business altogether, because someone saw Robert De Niro drop hanging on from the bottom of their truck. Like, someone saw him just, like, come out and didn't say a word.
Yeah. It was just like, I guess this guy needed a ride.
Did you see the name of the boat?
Was Mohana? Not Moana. It was M-O-H-A-N-A?
Did you tell
me what it was?
It's, I've been staring at the edge of the water long as I can remember.
It was Moana?
Never really knowing why.
Mohana. It was Mohana.
I wish I could be the perfect daughter, but I come back to the water no matter how hard I try. And no, I think it was Moana. I think it was like word for word.
It was M-O-H-A-N-A. And isn't Disney's Moana M-O-A-N-A?
Yeah.
It was Mohana.
I think it was Moana. I'm going to get an image.
I think it was Mohana.
I'm going to get an image of the boat.
Do it. Do it. Do it.
I can't find one. So that's not good on my...
Well, no. No, this is just something to put on for temperature for just next episode. We'll come back. Remember, we had to check into Palm Springs to see that there's dinosaurs at the end. We'll come back.
Okay.
Put a note.
Okay.
We'll come back. Know that it is Mohana, not Moana.
You're probably right.
But I really enjoyed your singing there. That was...
Thank you.
That was great. We're on to stargazing. This is where we talk about things we're watching or things we're excited about that we don't talk about on the main podcast.
the main part.
I just mean these are things we're watching. We just watch in our free time, not our podcast time.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. I got a list of a couple things actually.
Go for it. I'm excited to hear your list.
We just blasted through Ted Lasso. You can only watch it on Apple TV.
How was it?
It was really good.
Like Apple's like TV reel. Is that your kid still up?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like their flagship kind of thing show right now.
It's good. It's really light. It's kind of my manager again who recommended to me hit it right on the head. It's sort of the lighthearted series that we all need right now, amongst this COVID pandemic. So it's very lighthearted. It's great. It's just ridiculously optimistic the whole time. Well, he is anyways, and so it's good. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's on its own worth an Apple subscription. I think I just get it because I've got an Apple TV and I've got Apple Music. I don't know.
You're an Apple man.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have to pay anything extra for it, but I get it. So that's really good. I watched also That Promising Young Woman. That was a very good movie. It's different. It's definitely very different.
She's nominated too, isn't she?
Yeah, she got nominated.
Is it Carey Mulligan? What is her name?
Yeah, yeah. I found it kind of like American Psycho a little bit.
Oh yeah, interesting.
So take that what you will. It's definitely a good watch. It's different. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Watch it. It's good. It's different.
Okay.
A couple things I've been watching with the kids. Last weekend, I introduced them to The Neverending Story.
Oh.
That went well until about 20 minutes in when Artax, the horse, dies in the swamps of despair.
I remember being upset by that as a kid as well.
My 5-year-old just started bawling. I was like, I started to feel really bad. But at the same time, you know what? You can't shelter them forever.
No,
there's nothing wrong with some emotions. And you know what? They stuck with it and they finished the movie. So I'm really proud of them for that.
And I feel like I've watched that movie maybe 10 years ago and it did not hold up.
No.
Like yeah, is, I was like all as jazzed. Far as movies go, it's not a very good movie.
I was super jazzed to watch it again because it's, you know, nostalgia. Yeah. And I didn't watch it a lot as a kid. I watched it a couple times, but you know what? I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And yeah, it doesn't really hold up. There's some just, parts, but
there's visuals as a kid that just really stand out for you. And you're just like, wow, like a fluffy dragon or like a rock monster. And those things
I couldn't wait for the luck dragon. And then when you actually see him again, you're like, that's kind of shitty animatronics, but. Whatever.
But it just the whole continuity of the movie too doesn't really make sense. I thought I remembered, but
and then last night I showed them Little Shop of Horrors, but I ended up getting the director's cut, which is a very different ending than the theatrical release of A Little Shop of Horrors. So you could understand why they changed the ending. The plant wins in the director's cut. Both Audrey and Rick Moranis die, and the plant basically reproduces itself through cuttings and gets sold all across the world, and then ends up becoming this giant plant apocalypse, and they kind of they destroy the whole world. So,
and that's the director's cut.
That's the director's cut of Little Shop of Horrors. Wow. Yeah. Hmm.
I need to go back to that movie. I haven't seen that movie. Maybe that's a good movie to go back to. I finished the season 5 of The Expanse, which is it's a saga, man. It's like it's a pretty neat world that they've created. I don't think it ever
like really... a Battlestar Galactica.
It's more like they create these factions of an evolution of colonization into space. So they've got these people that are from Mars, people that work in the belt and Earthers, Belters, and Mars. And it's just really it's very political. Like Battlestar Galactica is kind of just like humans and Cylons. So it's like the humans versus, and this is just a big humans against humans, but they're all kind of protecting.
It's not just where one against the other. There's multiple factions against each other. Right.
So it's pretty interesting. I don't think it ever really gets as exciting as it did in the first, season 2 or 3, but, I'll be with it till the end. And I believe there's one more season after this, on Prime. So I would, any sci-fi, if you're into sci-fi, I definitely would recommend it because it's, they really get into some really cool world building.
Doesn't the first episode start with two people having, they're having sex and they're like,
no gravity.
Zero gravity sex.
Zero G's.
Yeah. Zero G.
Zero G's, no F's.
Zero G spot action.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And the first season tests you because it is a slow build. So if you can't get into the first season, then I don't really recommend it. But if you can get through the first season, then it really does pay off in season 2 and 3. But yeah, I would definitely recommend people.
That's where I don't get it. Where the first episode, like season 3 or 4, are like the seasons. Like the struggle of getting to the good seasons. A show should start off good and then get bad.
I don't know. Like, I think there could be real value in doing a slow and steady build of characters.
No, I have nothing wrong with that. But like, just kind of what you said, like if you can get through the first season, it's like, oh, really? Like, I've got to struggle to get through the first season to get.
But you need to understand the world, and you can't without really clever Christopher Lloyd exposition. Like, you just have to kind of take your time and just really understand the relationships and the world. And then when you do, then you can really pay off in consecutive seasons.
For sure. Know. But it can still be interesting while you're doing that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. But yeah. Sometimes, well, yeah. Yeah, it's know, a hard job
zero,
to do.
Zero G sex. That sounds like a good sell for
me. Yeah, I mean, if you're not in on zero G sex. And again, it's a little bit Game of Thrones-y, like, because they are constantly at war with each other, with all the different factions, the risk of life is big. And so there's definitely more death in the first couple of seasons where, you know, you start to kind of get behind a character and they're like, oh, wait, that character's gone.
So violence. So I appreciate there's that. Violence.
There's violence. Yep. And because it's genuine, right? Like you, whenever there's war, people are going to die. And so I always kind of second guess a series when, you know, you just can follow the same main protagonist throughout a whole seven season. Yeah, you know,
do they play it safe or do they take some risks?
Oh, no, they take risks and people
die.
People die. And people that's, die that you that's care what about. Happens in war. Sure. So I appreciate the genuineness of that. And it's not just built on...
I appreciate the Earthers for fighting for our freedom.
Yeah.
Thank you, Earthers.
They've created a language. They create, like, the Belters speak in like a dialect, and they have their own like language. It's kind of, you know, it's pretty, it's like Klingon or, you know, Elvish. They've really created a world. So I'd recommend it. The kids and the family watched Flora and Ulysses on Disney Plus.
We almost watched that. We watched Little Shop of Horrors instead of that one. Probably right. Should have, maybe.
So it's interesting. Like, I really thought I was going to watch a chipmunk superhero movie, and it was more a movie about struggling parents who were trying to figure out what they wanted to do for the rest of their life and how to make a relationship work. And then the side plot was the daughter had a superhero squirrel.
But so this is for kids. That's a little much for kids to take
and
in.
I didn't
nope.
ask my kids if they enjoyed it, but they didn't. You know, they didn't
complain
or walk away or complain. But I love Ben Schwartz, so anything with Ben Schwartz, I'm in. But yeah, it was interesting. So like all the voice actors for Huey, Dewey, and Louie on the new DuckTales are in it. Oh, the one thing I was going to ask is you told me to watch Willy's Wonderland.
Oh, God. As a joke. Yeah, I actually watched the whole thing.
Is it bad?
Oh, yeah. It's horrible. But it's like...
like good.
I know you're not a big gamer. For anybody that games out there, there's a video game called Five Nights at Freddy's where you're a janitor at a basically like a rundown Chuck E. Cheese where the animatronic things come to life at night and try and kill you. Anyway, so they went so far as to make a movie, basically same thing, as called Willy's Wonderland. And they somehow, I think because he needs to pay for his lavish lifestyle, I heard he doesn't turn anything down. They got Nick Cage to do it. He doesn't say a single word in the movie. Not a single word.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And and it's basically the same thing. He's stuck in this small town. He blows a tire. He has no money. The guy will fix his tire for him. If he can do a little bit of janitorial work over the course of an evening at a rundown children's Chuck E. Cheese, basically. And then the animatronics come to life and try to kill him.
You think he'd like swear? He knows all those swear words now.
He grunts and screams and stuff, but he doesn't actually audibly say anything to anybody.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's horrible. Right. Skip
it's
it.
It's horrible. Thanks for recommending it.
Yeah, but watch it as a joke to laugh if you've got time to burn. That's all. That's it. That's all. That's all. All right. That's it. That's all. Right. All. That's
thanks,
all.
Everybody. Remember, you can always rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify me. Feel free to send us an email at jarppodcast@gmail.com. I really appreciate everyone who's been listening, and thanks for the reviews that we received so far on Apple. And we're going to have to get on to Spotify to see if there's any traction on that bad boy.
For sure. We appreciate those that listen, and we'd appreciate more with a subscribe and even a little bit more if you gave us a little bit of feedback. So that'd be great. Anyways, another successful show, Russell.
Thank you, Sean.
You have yourself a great work week.
You too. I hope you get some sleep.
Me too. Love you, man.
Love you too.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review.